Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
And welcome to The Web Show on the British Tech Network. I'm Paul Wheatley, and we are here this evening to discuss the content management system WordPress. I have scoured the length and breadth of these British Isles to pull together an amazing panel. So to start with, to my left, we have the British Tech Network's the British Tech Network's own Sarah Gray. How are you this evening, Sarah?
I'm very well, thank you, Paul.
Good, good. Are you with us in mainland Britain this evening?
Yes, I am. I'm back on the mainland. Ireland is, of course, Southern Ireland is, of course, no longer part of the UK, but yes, I'm back in the UK.
Next, we have Ian Mackay, of the iOS show fame. How's life treating you this evening?
Not bad, Paul. I've only had about 3 hours sleep for some reason today, so I'm hoping I make it through the show without just kind of face planting onto my keyboard. We'll see how it goes.
All right. Okay. Well, we've got another show tomorrow night, though, so you have to make sure you get a bit of sleep in between those times.
Absolutely. Beauty sleep. It's not a video show tomorrow, is it, Paul?
I'm waiting to hear back, actually.
Okay.
It's either this week or next show we're going to start recording video. Not the web show, the iOS show. Finally, we have Simon Wheatley, no relation. As far as I'm aware. Your Twitter bio states, one of the Simons behind Code for the People. We make WordPress jump through hoops for us. Tweets normally reflect the opinion of half of my employer. Do you want to add to that at all, Simon?
I'm basically half of my employer. So Simon and I jointly own the company. I tend to work with people with a similar name to me, hence being on the podcast tonight and working with Simon Dixon.
Cool. Could you tell me a little bit more about Code for the People?
Code for the People is the joint effort of Simon and I. We've been working closer and closer together, but from separate companies, one-man band companies, for about 2 or 3 years now. We met at the very first WordCamp in the UK, which was in Birmingham 5 years ago. Since then, just really working, as I say, closer and closer together, various different kinds of projects, and eventually it just made sense that we created a separate company that we owned and join forces.
Cool. Very cool. So we're all here this evening to talk about WordPress. So I thought a good way to introduce into the topic, as I sometimes do, is to look at the Wikipedia article that kind of gives a bit of a brief overview of what WordPress is. So we'll start off with that. So WordPress is a free and open source blogging tool and a dynamic content management system based on PHP and MySQL. It has many features, including a plugin architecture and template system. WordPress is used in over 14.7 of the internet's top 1 million websites. Now, that number varies depending on where you look at it, but we'll accept 14.7 at the moment. And as of August 2011, manages 22% of all new websites. WordPress is currently the most popular CMS in use on the internet. Does that sum it up, panel? Anything else you want to add to what WordPress is?
I don't think
so. That sounds absolutely right, yes. It's an incredibly popular system.
And it actually, it powers the British Tech Network's website as well, so we have a common interest in it, and it's personally my CMS of choice as well. I think it's fantastic because it's you could just do so much with it. You're not kind of just stuck with it being a blogging tool by any means.
Absolutely. I've seen websites that run e-commerce stores. I've personally built one that runs illustration competitions, so illustrators can submit, upload illustrations, and then the judges can come along, see which illustrations have been submitted, count up, add a vote for the ones that they like, put it through rounds of voting. So that's all based purely on WordPress plugins and themes. So it's an incredibly flexible system in the hands of a developer.
And the main thing is, of course, being open source, just to explain that in case anybody doesn't know, it's completely free.
Yes.
So you can do anything you want with it. A fantastic tool. Ian, I obviously say that I know you use, obviously, because the British Tech Network uses WordPress. But Ian, I take it you use WordPress on a regular basis as well?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Nine times out of ten these days when I'm building a site, WordPress is the first thing I turn to because you can set it up that quickly. And, once you're used to it and you have your favorite kind of set of plugins and your favorite set of, in my case, basic themes that I build out from, it's hard to kind of go to other things. also from the user perspective, it's one of the easier things to get started with. You know, when you log into the control panel, you can kind of see what's there. And if you're doing things with custom post types and custom fields, you can give the user exactly what they need to update if they're changing the content regularly, which is a huge bonus. It's so simple to do compared to a lot of other content management systems.
I really do think that's one of the wonderful things about WordPress is that when you start it up, there's this famous 5-minute setup where you can get it installed in 5 minutes or less. And then once you've got your login to your new website that you've created, instantly you've got two content types just there. The admin area is set up around posting news to your website and creating pages on your website, so information about your company or information about whatever it is that you want to be talking about on the internet. So that immediacy when you set up WordPress for a beginner is absolutely fantastic. It's definitely one of the main factors behind its success, I would say.
Yeah, and the 5-minute setup as well. I mean, historically, way back when WordPress was a new thing, its main competition was something called Movable Type. And Movable Type didn't use MySQL for its database. It used a file system for its database, which was quite unusual and quite hard to set up in comparison. So when WordPress came along and said, well, you do this, and you do this, and you do this, and all of a sudden you've got your site working, people went, wow, how? And all of a sudden, you know, it picked up this enormous user base, which has grown and grown and grown. It's still one of the easiest things to install, as far as I know.
So Sarah, as I said, you're using this for the British Tech Network site. Now I notice you've done quite a bit of customization in the back end as well. So is there something that you quite like to do, doing a lot of changes and things like that?
The site's kind of evolved. It originally developed in iWeb, and it quickly outgrew what iWeb could really do with it in terms of what we wanted to do. And WordPress seemed a natural choice. I'd actually only just started getting into using WordPress at work for a couple of other microsites that we were doing, and it seemed to be the obvious thing to do. And with the likes of PowerPress, which is a fantastic plugin for specifically for doing the kind of things we do with categories and so on and so forth, for doing different podcasts, it just seemed to work really well. And we started off developing it with just a theme to get the look and feel the way we wanted it to. And it's now evolved to such a level that we've actually, there's a plugin and a theme which go hand in hand with each other, and actually have extended what we've done with the core WordPress to make it much more easy to do the kind of things we want to do with it.
So if you were just thinking about setting up a website and you were looking at a way to host your WordPress installation, there's, first of all, and correct me if I'm wrong here, there's possibly two decisions that you have to make. First of all, assuming you've already made the decision that you're going to go with WordPress, which is the self-hosted solution or the WordPress.com solution. So for start with, what's the pros and cons between going down each of those different routes?
I mean, I would say I've got a mixture of sites, that some of which are WordPress.com and some which are self-hosted. Should say self-hosting. Actually, it means it could be self-hosting as in your site, or it could actually on your servers, or it could actually be also on a domain host as well. It doesn't actually have to be just completely self-hosted. But the main difference is that if you put it on WordPress.com, they actually completely host it, but it does limit the kind of things that you can actually do with the site. And for me, I know certainly it was never an option for the British Tech Network site. However, there are some sites where it can actually work, and it means that you haven't even got to worry about any of the updates and so on and so forth, because that's all taken care for you by WordPress.com. Which, you know, I mean, I don't know what you think, Simon, but if you've got a customer that wants to completely look after the site themselves, in some ways actually having that where they don't have to worry about updates and so on and so forth is actually a real advantage.
It's definitely an attractive option. WordPress.com, as you say, just handle all of the updates for you. You don't need to worry about whether you've applied the latest security updates. You don't need to worry about whether your plugins and your themes are using the latest and greatest methods. but you do exactly, you get restrictions. Having said that, you can buy upgrades, and this is how WordPress.com funds itself largely, is through upgrades from the free hosting that you can get, which would be something along the lines of an address like myblog.wordpress.com. You can pay then to have your own domain so that you're myblog.com. You can pay to have a fancier theme, and you can pay for customization options on that theme. And they're very reasonable amounts of money. They're in the tens of dollars, if not $10, for most of these kind of options. So it's a pretty reasonable offer that they're giving. And it is amazing what a talented designer, a competent designer, can do with the ability to customize the CSS of your website. And if all you need from your website is static pages, by which I mean things like about my company and the contact page and so forth, and a contact form maybe, and the ability to post some news, whether you make that news the focus of your website as you would expect in a blog, or whether it's something where you're just saying, you know, Acme widgets have released the new blue widget this week, then WordPress.com is definitely a valid option for you.
I've got to get me one of those blue widgets.
They're much, much better than the old green widgets.
Oh, yeah. But for me, the biggest, because WordPress.com is almost like training wheels, and you will, if you do things to your site, run into these limitations. But then when you get to that point, it's incredibly easy to migrate your content from a WordPress.com hosted by WordPress account to a self-hosted account. You just kind of take your data, use the built-in import-export tools, and you can have a new blog hosted yourself up and running in literally 10 or 15 minutes. I did this for a friend of mine, and he was just flabbergasted at how easy it was. He was thrilled.
Yeah, I did that for fairly recently, actually, for one of our microsites at work, where we wanted to be able to do more with it, and it had previously been set up by somebody who wasn't really technical. So they'd set it up on WordPress.com. We needed to do more with it, and you know, we left the old site there, but built the other site, the hosted site, purely by migrating it, and we're able to switch it within half an hour or so.
So we've referred to limitations a couple of times here, but I mean, for example, what are the limitations that you're going to run into by having a WordPress.com installation?
You can't add custom post types. So, for example, there's a system run on WordPress, which is actually run by a company up near me in Derbyshire, which is called Happy Tables, and they do an amazing system built on WordPress that runs for restaurants. So they have a custom post type for menus, and then they have a custom post type for menu items, and they have a number of other different custom post types. So you wouldn't be able to do that on WordPress.com. You're limited to posts for news and pages for your static-ish content. So if you want to get into doing that kind of thing, what you're doing with the British Tech Network, with your podcasting is something that I don't think you can do on WordPress.com. Now, I might be wrong about that, but I don't think you can. So if you want to do something that's a little bit out of the mainstream, you may find that WordPress.com doesn't handle it, and that's the point that you want to sort of look at moving over.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the flip side of all this is that with WordPress.com, you just have less to worry about. You don't have to worry about things like bandwidth limits. You don't have to worry about getting hacked. You don't have to worry about, what happens if your host has to move your site from one server to another? What do you have to do about all that? So it is a much more comfortable place to be in a lot of ways. But if you're technically competent, or if you're employing somebody who's technically competent, I think self-hosting is usually the way to go.
Okay. So, Simon, as well, you'd put a couple of notes against this thing in the notes here, just to talk about traffic and scale. So I suppose that Ian kind of covered that off there, that, obviously if it's self-hosted on WordPress.com, you're not going to have to worry about traffic and scale.
Absolutely, because they have hundreds of servers in data centers distributed around the world. They withstand you know, extreme quantities of interest, for example, at launches of Apple events when you've got GigaROM network or one of the Apple blogs Steve Jobs, now Tim Cook, would be on stage announcing these things and the fans go in a frenzy. Everybody's very interested, world media interest, and that wave of traffic is something that WordPress.com handles very, very easily. So it's just not a worry, that kind of thing. So you do get that advantage.
The other thing you noted on this part was SEO. So I was quite interested to see what you mean by SEO here.
Well, that's something that I may be slightly out of date on, because there's a couple of Google updates have gone past since I was told this by one of the guys who works at Automattic, who run WordPress.com. But he said that it was a sort of an effect with WordPress.com and the way they aggregate posts from everybody who's on their WordPress.com network. So everybody that's got a blog on WordPress.com, your post appears when you tag it with cooking or recipes or whatever. You get linked up with other people who are blogging, all the other hundreds of thousands of websites on WordPress.com that are blogging about recipes. You get linked up with that. And there was an advantage to that effect. And I guess that, again, you can see the other side of that, the limitation of that, which is that you wouldn't, maybe you want to be seen as a totally independent site. You don't want that linking up with other people. So when you don't want your blog posts appearing alongside the other people who are writing about recipes. So I guess there's both a limitation and an advantage there, depending how you see it.
Right.
Yeah, it's fair to say that a lot of that stuff is a question of WordPress's legacy. You know, it's evolved over quite a few years now. It's been going for nearly 10 years since it was sort of first invented, founded. And it's had to kind of fend off or deal with a lot of changes in the way the internet works, the way people blog, the way people relate to content. And I mean, you know, the hot new thing now, I guess, maybe not so new anymore, is Tumblr, you know. And that really encourages interaction, stuff like that. And WordPress.com does that to a degree, but it's not built for that, you know. It's something you can do if you want to, but it's not at the core of the experience in the same way.
Okay. So I've made a decision as to whether I'm going to go with a WordPress.com or download and self-host on UK2, for example. So now I'm starting to think about what should I do next if I want to start kind of getting my hands dirty a little bit. So looking at kind of plugins and PHP functions and things like that, what's kind of the limitations there? Because there's obviously ways that you can install and download plugins for example, Google Analytics or some other kind of fancier things. And we've already mentioned a number of them, such as PowerPress and Happy Tables and things like that. But what's the argument for using those instead of getting your hands dirty with the PHP and things like that? Or is it just a case of if you want to get your hands dirty, you can? If you don't, there's generally a plugin for it. What's your thoughts?
Well, Paul, obviously you're a genius PHP programmer, so you could roll your own. But if you're not a genius PHP programmer, there are a lot of very good programmers out there who are writing plugins, and chances are they'll have thought about more things than you will have in writing that plugin, and have built it in a way that makes it easier to integrate with other site features and things like that. But ultimately, you know, if it doesn't quite do what you want, you may want to write your own or find somebody to write one for you. There was some debate at WordCamp UK this weekend around writing your own plugins and kind of having them for your own use versus actually publishing them and making them public and how you go about that process. But, you know, it's what works for you, really.
I mean, I came to a point with the British Tech Network site where I found that the best thing to do was actually to have a single plugin which I wrote, which it basically handled all the bits and pieces of things that all the other plugins I was using wasn't doing to get it to do the things the way I wanted it to do it. So it's sort of like a mop-up, and it's got lots of little bits in it, and I found that a really useful approach. But actually to make use of the features from the good plugins that were out there, and we use three or four, we don't use too many, but I needed something to handle, you know, some of it is integration between things, and also things like the way we integrate the audio and the video. PowerPress is great at handling podcast channels, but there's no distinct relationship between them, so you can't have an audio and a video one and there's a relationship between them. And it's that kind of thing that I wanted to be able to do, so I just basically added this plugin And that was the one. That was the example. Was one of the things I added to it. It's made it so much easier.
Absolutely. One of the great advantages of WordPress is this kind of Lego approach that you've got with plugins and themes, where you find a theme that you want. So you've got the look and feel that you want, even without any kind of programming or development or even design ability. And then you can say, I want a contact form. So you can go out and find any one of many, many contact forms, Contact Form 7, Gravity Forms, Grunion. You can then decide you want to show your tweets on the side of the website, or you want to show a link to your Pinterest images. And all of these things are available to you to add in, to search for on through your WordPress dashboard, through the admin area in your WordPress website, and really easily add with just a couple of clicks. It's again, a great strong factor behind the growth of WordPress is that plug-and-play ability. That said, it's always worth, when you're looking at plugins and you see, before you get too sparkly-eyed about how fantastic it's going to be when you've got this thing plugged into your website and you've got that extra functionality that you always really wanted.
My eyes are sparkling right now, I can tell you.
Exactly. So before you dive right in there, sir, and install that plugin, may I suggest you check when it was last updated? May I suggest you have a look on WordPress.org in what we call the plugin repository to have a look at what rating people have given that plugin. And you can see there as well whether there are any support requests that are open against the plugin, and have a look at those and see whether people are having fundamental problems with the plugin, like they install it and everything falls over, or they install it and the header goes south or something along those lines. So it's always worth looking at that and just checking out, just really just sniffing it, I guess, and seeing whether it smells all right from all of those points of view.
And then there's a side point there, which is if the plugin isn't in the plugin repository and it's free, you probably don't want to install it.
Absolutely.
Because you cannot trust anything. Well, to give you a bit of background, all themes in the WordPress theme repository go through a kind of validation process. Plugins don't, but they do have more eyes on them than a plugin just out there in the wild that you download from somebody's website. So unless it's a plugin from a reputable source, or it's from the theme repository. And if you don't know what a reputable source is, then the theme repository is the only reputable source. Don't touch it with a barge pole, because people can do some very bad stuff to your site if you install something that you shouldn't be.
Absolutely. And there are mechanisms in the WordPress plugin repository for bad plugins to be pulled when they're found. The other great thing about it is there are mechanisms in the WordPress.org plugin repository to update plugins. So if somebody does find a problem with a plugin you've got on your website, they contact the developer. The developer is very responsible and has made an honest human mistake, as we all do. Then they can create an update, issue it, and every single website that has that plugin installed from the repository gets an update notice saying you need to update your plugin, and the developer can even put a notice in there saying it's really urgent that you actually do that because there's this security flaw.
I had some great advice there, actually, because I had a couple of notes here for it to talk about the concern about support for plugins. And I think you've just hit the nail on the head there. You really have to do a little bit of research. Unless you've got kind of all of us do, is we've got a website that doesn't do anything. It's mainly just a test bed where you can kind of throw things at it. And that's where I regularly test plugins to just check if they're working or not. It doesn't really matter if it breaks or anything like that. So, is there something to be said around plugins as well? I mean, you kind of mentioned being a bit starry-eyed and look at all this awesome stuff there that we can plug into our website. But you can have overkill on plugins. You know, if you're sitting with a WordPress site that's got, you know, 30-plus plugins attached to it, it is going to start to slow down.
I think not only that, but you've also got to think about the fact that the more plugins you've got, the more issues there could be between issues where something causes an issue with another between plugins.
Oh, yeah, I never thought that.
And that's one of the reasons why I like to try and keep the number of plugins to the absolute minimum you need to. Production, especially on production environment, if you've got a live on the live site. I mean, like you were saying, you know, I've got, obviously I use virtual machines for each of my test sites, and you know, that's where I really download as many different plugins to do a specific thing and to try them all out, see how they work. Sometimes I'll use ones that aren't necessarily still being maintained, but providing I feel confident that I can maintain the code, then I'll decide whether I want to use it. But you know, you do have to be very careful.
Yeah, the way plugins work is they have functions inside them, obviously, and these functions tie into specific pieces of functionality within the WordPress core functionality. So when a WordPress core function runs, it will go, right, are there any plugins that want to be in on this particular function when I'm running it? What do they want to do? And obviously, if you have lots of plugins, then they might all be binding to the same function, or they might not be running in the right order, or it might just be that a lot of them are happening at the same time and it's slowing things right down, because instead of having one or two firing when you load a page, you've got kind of 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 or 17 or 50 if you're really crazy.
and I've seen those crazy people.
Oh yeah, and the order they run in can be really important as well, because you can tweak that stuff manually if you really know what you're doing. But I hope never to get to that stage with most sites.
And as well, I mean, there's a great advice about kind of looking for reviews and things like that, but I regularly find the App Store to be just a sea of plugins. I mean, the two things that I've kind of noted here, and it's kind of the two top things that I would want to do when I'm installing, first of all, when I'm installing a fresh WordPress install, is to implement Google Analytics and something to auto-generate sitemap.xml. And doing any searches of any of those keywords just brings up a plethora of plugins, each of which have, you know, 3 to 4 stars. It's very, very difficult. Can you recommend, and there may not be an answer to this, so I apologize if this is an unanswerable question, but is there some kind of a review system out with WordPress that kind of says this is the app, the plugin that you should be using for Google Analytics? This is the one that you should be using for generating your sitemap.
That would be something really that WordPress.org would, I imagine, not be very comfortable in creating, because they would be recommending one perfectly reasonable developer over another perfectly reasonable developer who's just taking a slightly different flavored approach to a problem, for example. I mean, I can tell you which plugins I would install myself for that, but even that choice changes, to be honest, over time.
Of course.
At the moment I use a chap who's known on Twitter as Yoast, Yoast, and I use his Google Analytics plugin. Previous to that I used a different one. And there's a German guy who writes a plugin called, and I'm just trying to look at it now, Google XML Sitemaps. I think that's the one.
It's certainly the one that rings a bell for me.
Right. I mean, there's XML Google Sitemaps and Google Sitemaps XML, which one do you go for? It's kind of complex.
Yeah, so I suppose you just kind of have to go for the star rating and do all the checks that you mentioned before about making sure it's been updated recently and things like that. We maybe put some of those links actually in the show notes, if that's okay, Simon, if you wouldn't mind adding them at the bottom of the Google Doc, and I'll add them in the show notes for after the fact. The other thing, I suppose, that comes along with this, and I know, Simon, you put a massive big warning against this, but hacking the PHP. Now, when I put this note into the show notes, I was more thinking about hacking the PHP in the themes. I completely appreciate that you should stay away from the core WordPress functionality. But
let me sort of put some background on that. Don't hack core is this sort of warning mantra that you will hear hollered from one end of the WordPress development community to the other. The idea behind it is WordPress is composed of a bunch of PHP files, and they're text files. And if you know a bit of PHP, it's very, very tempting when you find that WordPress isn't quite doing what you want it to do to open your text editor and edit WordPress itself so that it does do what you want it to do. But the problem with that is when you come to upgrade WordPress, it will overwrite your changes and you've got to then reapply your changes. Not only that, but you could well be introducing issues with either performance or security or even both, where you've accidentally opened a door or accidentally put some brakes on and you're driving around with the website equivalent of the handbrake on. So there are a number of issues with that. I personally feel that extends to if you're using a well-maintained plugin or a professionally developed theme, then you don't really want to go around changing that plugin's code or that theme's code because you've got exactly the same problems there. What you might want to do with a theme is use something called child themes, where you can have a theme that you've bought. It's not quite doing what you want. So you can create a new theme and define that as a child theme. And I'll give you the link to the various articles and some tutorials on this. But that means that you can take a theme which has a blue header, but blue headers aren't as good as blue widgets, so we want a green header. And you can have your child theme override the color of its parent theme to make the header blue and override the way that it displays the fonts for the headers. And this means that when an upgrade comes along for the theme, the professionally developed parent theme, you're able to install that and not worry that you're overwriting any of your changes and not need to work out what those right. changes were and try and find your, you know, half-buried notes and that the dog's been chewing on for the last 2 years.
I mean, to add to that, if you are going to mess with a theme, almost every theme comes with a file called functions.php, which is where all the bits and pieces that the theme wants to do that aren't kind of part of the main logic reside. So if you're going to hack a theme, then functions.php is probably the only bit you should think about changing. If you're going to be adding functionality, I should say. If you're changing kind of the layout of the header, then fair enough.
Take issue with that and say everything that you can do in a theme, you can do in a plugin. So I would suggest in that situation, you write your own plugin. I did this recently for a site which actually I bought the theme from Genesis Themes, which is a professional theme shop. It had a parent theme and it had a child theme, and you can't have grandchild themes really in WordPress. So I actually wrote a plugin that did all that stuff that you're suggesting, but outside of functions.php. So it's a separate thing. So again, if they upgrade the parent theme, if they upgrade the child theme, then I can just change my plugin or adjust it there.
Yes. I guess I was speaking more from the point of view of if you want something, particularly if you're handing over a site to a client, there was some discussion about this in WordCamp. If you've built something as a plugin, then potentially the client could accidentally switch it off or delete it.
So
if it's part of the theme, it's less visible to them. They can still probably screw it up if they really try. Yes, and just on Don't Hack Core, just for those who haven't had much use of WordPress, when you install it, you'll find there are some files in the root directory. Don't touch them. There are some files in a directory called wp-admin. There are some files in a directory called wp-includes. Don't touch them. And there's a directory called wp-content, and that is the stuff you can change because that's where all your themes and plugins and things go.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I think we're kind of covered a lot to do with themes there as well. So the next kind of thing that was talking about, that was types and views, Simon, a demo from WordCamp in relation to themes.
This is just something that I saw at WordCamp, a chap called Mario over from Bulgaria. His company also make the WPML plugin, which is a multi-language plugin, means that you can have your website in French and Danish and Urdu and whatever you want, really. But they have this plugin, Types and Views. It splits down in two ways. Types is one plugin and is free, and that enables you to create your custom post types. So if you wanted to create a website to do with movies is the classic custom post type example. You can create very easily through the plugin, just clicking around within the WordPress interface and create a post type called movies, which means that you've got posts, pages, and movies. You could create another one called actors. You could create a taxonomy called genres, so you can then create the movie Alien and you can mark that under sci-fi and horror. We can argue about whether that's accurate later. And you can create actors, and so Sigourney Weaver can be associated with this particular movie, and all of those good things that you would want in a movie review site. And that is all done through this free plugin called Types. Now, the way they get their money is they sell another plugin called Views, which is a premium plugin, which means you pay for it. And that is, I think he said it was $50. So not bank breaking for most people if you're setting up a professional website, perhaps. And from that, you can, it's really nifty the way you can roll your own layouts to show the various different content types that you've created. So you could then have a carousel at the top of the page where you flicked through the movie posters that were associated with the latest four reviews that you'd put on. You could have something in the sidebar which showed the top voted actors and actresses. You could have another thing underneath a column. So you can build up this kind of grid-like magazine layout that you see on, say, the .NET website or on the BBC homepage, although the BBC homepage is a little bit more complex, possibly, yeah. A little recently redesigned, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Say the BBC News page, where you've got that area where you've got, you know, international news and you've got news headlines and that kind of thing. That's the kind of thing you can do with this Views plugin. And it was a pretty impressive demo. I had a chat with him afterwards, and they seemed to have thought things through pretty thoroughly. I was very impressed, both with his presentation, I thought was excellent, and with the power of the plugin.
Oh, very cool. Sarah, with the British Tech Network's website, was I take it that wasn't a theme that was written from scratch, was it?
Yeah, it was a theme written from scratch. It was actually quite easy to do, and I did it quite a long time ago, and it's been enhanced a lot. But it was I decided the best way to do it, because of the kind of things we wanted to do, was rather than try and create a child of another theme, I thought it was better to actually do it from scratch. I found it very easy to do. It's just, you just have to understand the various PHP files, what they do, and when to use them, and where to put stuff, really. And then it's just about creating the style sheet to actually to go with that.
I have to admit, I've never ever used child themes or anything like that, because I tend to build them from scratch myself. In fact, I can't honestly remember ever having used an actual theme that I've downloaded. So this whole idea of child themes and things like that are quite interesting. I mean, I've never done that before.
It's great for creating families of websites. So we've done, Simon and I have done some websites for relatively large organizations where they want to be able to very easily spin up something to talk about the oily widgets department as opposed to the dry widgets department, or they want to blog from the widgets conference. And so if you've got a parent theme which gives you the main look for that widget organization, then
yeah,
you
the
can
corporate styles.
Yeah, you can spin something up that's more blog-centric, but you're only having to change a couple of styles and a couple of templates in it rather than roll everything from new. Right. And then if you update the one template, everything cascades through and updates to all of the child themes.
It's worth saying, if you're a developer, it may be worth building your own kind of very lightweight theme. If there's a lot of functionality you use frequently, you can use that as your parent theme, then just have a new child theme for each client.
Absolutely.
It's also worth saying that the parent-child thing is relatively recent in WordPress terms. It's only been an option since for a couple of years. I think it came out in WordPress 2.8 or thereabouts. And so there are a lot of older themes around that don't support being built on with child themes. So if you find something you like the look of, you may find you can't actually just... you may have to hack it properly rather than building a child theme on top of it.
Cool. Okay. So I've got my website, it's hosted, I've put all the plugins that I need, I've got Google Analytics, I've got a beautiful theme with child themes, and I've not touched the core code. Now I've got my website I'm running, and I'm quite interested in meeting like-minded individuals or learning more about this topic. So what would be your recommendations on how I could get a little bit more out of it, how I could even start on WordPress, and any communities that are out there? What's your thoughts?
Well, I would, there is actually wiki rather than a WordPress site, which is slightly odd, but nonetheless, wiki.wpuk.org. And if you click through there, you'll see that they maintain a fairly comprehensive listing of all of the WordPress user group meetups throughout the UK. So if you go there, you'll be able to find, if you're in London, I think there are two pretty large meetups. If you're in lucky enough to be in Manchester, you have access to the meetup that Mike Little runs. And Mike is actually the co-founder of WordPress, lives in Stockport, just outside Manchester.
Oh, right.
So that's a great one to go to. There's obviously clearly one up in Edinburgh. Those guys actually hosted the WordCamp up there recently.
Yes, in fact, this weekend. It's a Scottish group. So there's a meetup in Glasgow as well. I think there's one in is it Inverness? And I think there's various other little groups that are kind of popping up under the WP Scotland banner. But yes, it's. It's good.
Okay.
So have a look on that wiki.wpuk.org. I'll give you the link again so you can shove it in the show notes and have a click around.
Great. So that's some community stuff. Would you recommend any books or blogs or anything like that for learn a little bit more? Perhaps writing themes or something?
I'll be very forthright. I've never read a book about WordPress. Right. I'm sure there are some good ones out there, but I've learned everything I've learned about WordPress, partly by just looking into how other people have done things in the code, as is often the way when you're programming, partly by reading lots of other people's blogs, and increasingly nowadays by checking out things like wordpress.stackexchange.com and, you know, more focused, I've got a problem, how do you solve this kind of sites out there.
Yeah, also the for plugins, the actual WordPress.org site is superb for this sort of thing. This is how, particularly for API stuff, I found it very, very useful.
Oh, yes, the WordPress codex lives on the WordPress site, and that has a listing of all the internal functions. So if you're developing, it's absolutely invaluable.
Grand. Okay. This podcast and all the others on the British Tech Network wouldn't be possible without UK2.net. They kept the British Tech Network afloat for over 3 years. They're brilliant, and you should go and check them out. Now, we've got a whole pile of voucher codes. Probably the best way to get a hold of those voucher codes is if you head on over to britishtechnetwork.com and you click on the sponsors link, you will then be able to see all of the voucher codes and everything like that in there. Now, if you then click on the link to UK2.net on there, head on over and purchase everything that you need to purchase, and then use those voucher codes from that point onwards. Now, UK2 actually have a really good, interesting part that on their website that talks specifically about WordPress hosting. So if you go to UK2.net, once you've been to the BritishTechNetwork.com, of course, click on web hosting and scroll down until you see the WordPress logo, which is almost at the bottom of the page. And if you click on that, you can then see some of the options that they have there for actually hosting a WordPress website and some hosting packages there. So some quite interesting stuff about WordPress on there. Also to know, anytime that you're logging into your account, once you've purchased what you need to purchase from UK2, I'd really appreciate it if you could still come through the British Tech Network and click on that banner, because it's just always good for them to see the amount of traffic that we send to their site. So so that's UK2. They support British Tech and you should support them.
Even if you're logging into your account,
sure,
still
yeah.
Use the link on the bagel on the sorry the British Tech Network so, on the British Tech Network site, because we will actually get credit for it, and indeed, that helps us to keep the network going.
Indeed. We're going to go on the next section now, which is listener questions and follow-ups. So first of all, some of these are relating to WordPress as well, so we'll still be able to touch into WordPress. So the first one is, what are the guidelines for choosing which type of hosting you'll need for WordPress, and is it possible to switch from one type of hosting to the other? I am reading that as in guidelines, as in server requirements, and is it possible to switch from one type of hosting to the other, as in switch from WordPress.org to WordPress.com? And that comes from Ord Saunders, who is has been on this show a couple of times. So what's your thoughts on that one?
I think Ian mentioned earlier that you can start on WordPress.com and you can switch to a self-hosted option, and you can go the other way around as well. So if you find that self-hosted isn't for you, and it isn't something you want, or you want to be able to deal with more traffic perhaps, but not have to pay the really top whack fees for a top whack host, then you can export your content from your self-hosted and go back in the other direction. So really, guidelines for choosing what type of hosting, how much flexibility do you think you're going to need? Given that WordPress.com is free, maybe just sign up there without going for any of the custom options and have a click around. Good way of getting to know WordPress, actually. That's something Simon and I often recommend to a client, is just sign up over here and just accustom yourself to WordPress. Just, you know, have a click around, for that, see how you feel about it. And if you want more customization than that, then self-hosted is the way to go.
It's worth saying, if you've never bought hosting before, the kind of hosting you want is Linux hosting. I would not recommend hosting WordPress on a Windows box.
Right.
Okay. It is possible, and Microsoft have put some effort behind it recently, but absolutely, I personally would recommend Linux.
Windows is a world of pain in the server space, by and large. Not just WordPress. That's just my opinion. Carry on.
Grant, okay, so the next one, another show on the network, I believe it was the Mac show, mentioned a tutorial on how to move iWeb to UK2. Can you provide the link? So I'm happy to provide the link. It was actually it was a screencast from Don McAllister, so we can provide the link to Don McAllister. But just quickly, if nobody has an answer to this, it's fair enough, but does anybody have any thoughts on moving from iWeb to a WordPress platform? I think, Sarah, you mentioned you've actually done that before.
Yeah, I did it the hard way, unfortunately. What I did is I actually just looked at what iWeb actually did. I didn't look underneath it because it was just too horrendous. It really was horrendous. When it absolutely placed every single object through CSS, I thought, no, I don't even want to start with this.
Oh, no, it's scarier than that, because you can't, depending on how it's built, you can't build a sitemap of an iWeb site because it dynamically generates all the navigation with JavaScript.
Wow.
So you can't even, like, get it crawl on an iWeb site in some cases. We have this with one of our clients at the moment, and I was going to build a little sitemap of their old site to compare with the new one we were planning for them, and then I just got into it and went, no, don't think so. Not going to do this. Not worth my time. it's challenging. I would be looking along the lines of copying and pasting to move content from iWeb.
Yeah, I mean, I very often do this with designs as well. I know it may seem a bit masochistic to do it, but I actually find that it's easier to look at what's doing and then actually create it in the style sheet that I want. I might look and feel in some of the styles individual. Items in the CSS, but generally I actually find it easier to do it that way rather than actually just totally use what somebody else has done.
Absolutely. Get a designer, a web designer in, and have them look at the theme as an inspiration, but then rebuild it.
Yeah.
Okay. When is it appropriate? I think we've covered this one as well. When is it appropriate to use a child theme? Sorry, I should mention the last one was from Ian Forrest. So thank you very much, Ian, for that last question. When is it appropriate to use a child theme against just hacking the current theme? That's from Pat Spaven. I don't think there's much more to say about that, really, is there?
I think the general rule there is basically either use a child theme or write your own theme. Don't hack the current theme. Because it's a world of pain when it does update.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, okay, no problem. The next one, this isn't necessarily a WordPress one, although it could be relating to WordPress. I am experimenting with responsive design and want to provide a drop-down menu instead of full nav when in 320 view. Is this okay? How would a screen reader deal with it? And would it read the navigation out twice? That's from Carl Rowland. So what's your thoughts?
My understanding of this is that it is okay. I am not an accessibility guru, but I think that the screen reader would deal with it just fine. Would it read the navigation out twice? I don't believe so, because most techniques that I can think of for responsive design for doing that, the navigation would still just be on the page once. You'd just be showing and hiding it. In fact, this is how Bootstrap, which is a CSS framework from Twitter, handles a navigation. By default, I think when you shrink the size, you can change the navigation from ranged across the top.
That's how it does it. I think there are kind of three different ways you could look at this. Firstly, you could reconfigure the navigation so it appears in a different way. For something like Bootstrap, it then requires a bit of JavaScript support to kind of show that or hide the navigation. Secondly, you could reconfigure, for example, your list of links into something like a drop-down select box. There's a plugin for WordPress that does this by a guy called Sancho the Fat, who is also WordCamp UK this weekend. So he fixed a bug in that for me. If you do that, then you have to do that server side because it's a PHP call. So you would have to have the navigation on the page twice. So then in your responsive design query, you'd have to do something with the other one that hid it in one case and with the second one in another case. The best resource I've come across for that is an article at A List Apart called Now You See Me, which kind of gives you everything you could possibly want to know in terms of what CSS you apply to an element and what screen readers then do to it. So I think that's probably the best place to learn more about that. The other thing you could do, rather than having... one thing I've done in a few sites, rather than having navigation at the top, you can just kind of have a very simple link within the page and, for example, put a menu in the footer instead of the header. And quite often you find with websites you have a footer menu as well as a header menu. And for a lot of sites, I've just kind of deleted the header menu for the responsive view and just kind of link people down to the footer. And you can have just a link back to the top if that's where they want to get back to, which is quite a neat solution. I can't remember where I saw that originally, but it's been a couple of years since I've implemented that last. So.
Okie dokie, and our final question for this evening. I want to change the location of WP Admin for security reasons. How would I go about that? And that's from P. Russell.
I dive in on that one?
By all means. I'm
going to pile on in a minute, but you carry on, Simon.
You do not do that. Right. I actually just contacted one of the WordPress lead developers just before, just to double check my feelings on this, and his feelings are the same as my feelings, which is it is not supported. It will potentially break some plugins. It does not necessarily help the security of your site. Instead, you could look at a number of options.
P. Russell, you said you want to do it for security reasons. I think you need to be very clear on what those security reasons are. If it's so that you get fewer bots trying to log into your site 7,000 times a minute, then there's a way of dealing with that. If it's so that your WP admin is not left exposed, there are ways to do that. You can, I'll let Simon jump on this as well, but for example, you can limit the IP range that people can log in from, and there are a few other options I'm sure Simon is about to jump onto.
You can limit, you can get a yourself or a developer friend to limit who can log into your administration area by IP address or by requiring an additional form of authentication called basic authentication. Although if you're doing that, really the first step I think is to be acquiring an SSL certificate so that you're securing your username and password when you type them in, because otherwise they're sent in the clear. This is fine if you're only on networks that you control, but if you're on a network in Starbucks or other coffee shops that are available, then you could potentially have somebody sitting in the same coffee shop on the same Wi-Fi sucking down all the traffic and looking for usernames and passwords. So sort out an SSL certificate and then go and have a look on the codex.wordpress.org website about administration over SSL. And again, Paul, I'll throw you these links over to pop into the show notes. Do that. Potentially even block it by, like I was saying, block it by IP address so that only you can only access it from certain internet points, which might be your house or your office. But if you're doing that, make sure that you leave access open to wp-admin/admin-ajax.php, because that is an Ajax gateway that could well be used by scripts. And if they can't get to it, then things might stop working on the front of your website.
Grant?
Yeah, and there's some another couple of quick things. You can also get two-factor authentication plugins. So if you want to log in, you can get it to text you or email you, and you need the second code before you can get in. And there was something else that popped into my
head. Notably, one of those from Google who provides the little Google Authenticator app that you can get on Android and on iOS, and you can link that up to WordPress, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. And don't forget, you don't have to have admin as your admin username, and you should always, 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 always use a strong password and never use the same password for more than one site at once.
Indeed. Absolutely.
That's good advice for anything as opposed to just WordPress.
Can I throw a cool plug-in as well for security? A couple, actually, which were mentioned in one of the security talks at the weekend. Limit login attempts. One of the problems with websites which have username and password access is that the bad guys can just sit and write a script that throws hundreds of usernames and passwords a minute at your website. They can be trying admin password one, password two, almost before you can think. And eventually, they're probably going to hit on the right combination. Now, limit login attempts stops that or slows that process down vastly by saying, if you get the username and password wrong more than four times, you're locked out for 5 minutes and you can't make any more attempts. If you get locked out for 5 minutes four times in a row, you're locked out for 24 hours. So you can see that rather than being able to sit there and just throw these hundreds and hundreds of usernames and passwords at your WordPress site, limit login attempts is just chopping that whole thing off at the knees. Mm-hmm. And really is one of the plugins that you can install that will most increase the security of your website. You can also look at various things that scan your website from outside. So there's a service, great service in America called Susuri, S-U-C-U-R-I, and they have a WordPress plugin which will scan your website from the inside. So they may spot things from the inside that they can't spot from the outside. Wonderful thing about Susuri, yes, it's a paid service. No, I'm not sponsored by them and I'm not paid by them, but they will help you if something goes wrong. So if something nasty gets into your website, they will help you find it and they will help you shoot it and help you drag it out the back and bury it in the garden.
And it's worth saying that any secure system is only as strong as its weakest point. So go and read the Codex article on hardening WordPress and take account of all the other things there. Because, you know, you might have the most secure login in the world, but if you've got a plugin with a vulnerability and somebody gets into your site that way, then it's all for nothing.
Yeah. Indeed, indeed.
But don't be too scared. It's fine.
No. Paranoia,
but not perhaps out and out panic.
And the final thing is just a little bit of feedback from the last show, and it was in relation to Chris Edwards' question: Should I be developing with TVs and consoles in mind? And Decade City on Twitter actually corrected me to say that the PS3 browser switched from NetFront to WebKit very recently, so it renders pages okay now, but still the TV Plus controller is not a good interface. My apologies, I was basing that on NetFront that was on the PS3 up until very recently, but apparently it just changed a couple of months ago to WebKit, so it actually renders okay now. But still, I'm not convinced it's the way to browse websites, but just to cover that off. Finally, folks, do we have some picks? I'm going to start with Sarah. Do you have anything for us tonight?
I think I would probably have to say, because I always like to do a cool thingy that is related to the subject that we're talking about. So I think I would probably have to say the PowerPress plugin, because without that, we couldn't have done the British Tech site.
Grant, very good. Is it the PowerPress plugins, are they free?
Yeah. I haven't used any plugins that I've had to pay for on the site. So generally, I prefer not to if we can. Keep the costs down to the network.
Indeed. Ian, do you have anything for us?
Yes, since it's a WordPress show, I'm also going to pick a plugin. My favorite plugin in the whole world, which is Advanced Custom Fields by an Australian developer called Elliot Condon. And it's absolutely brilliant. You can set up kind of extra fields for any kind of custom post type that you happen to be putting into your site. And there are also a few premium additions to it, which do some very nifty things. My favorite one of them is something called a repeater field. So when you hand over the site to a client, they can actually kind of add several things, similar things. And so, you know, instead of having one text field, they can add as many of those text fields as they like and have a big list of things that you can then show on a page, which is something that you can use surprisingly often when you're designing slightly more complex pages.
Cool. And Simon, do you have anything for us?
Can I go with two?
Oh, of course, yes.
One I've already mentioned, which is the limit login attempts, which just gives you a little bit more peace of mind. And the other one, which I loved when I first saw it on a magazine website, was Google Analytics Dashboard. And what this does is it looks at your Google Analytics account, which you probably have installed, so it won't work without that. And it puts little spark lines, tiny little graphs, next to every single one of your posts, every single one of your pages, every single one of your custom content types in the back end that shows you how many views and visitors you've had recently. So you can just look down the listing and you can see that one had a spike in traffic there. This one's more popular than the others, and you don't need to go and have a look in Google Analytics. It is just magical. I love it.
That's superb. Sarah, we need that. And finally, my one is a theme called Blank Slate, which is where I always start. Now, I know I did say before that I don't use themes, so that was possibly a little bit disingenuous. But what I meant by that was I like to design my own from scratch. And the theme Blank Slate, which is actually on WordPress.org, so you're able to get this there. Basically, all it is it's just a boilerplate, for want of a better phrase, and it just includes all the PHP for pulling in all the necessary code. Includes a very basic kind of div structure. Doesn't include any CSS or anything like that, which basically allows you to go to town on it. And I start pretty much all of my designs in WordPress and that on that theme called Blank Slate, and it is again free. Finally, we'll be back in 2 weeks again with another show. The topic is planned to be responsive design, but with some of these, they do change depending on what guests I can get on in that show.
More WordPress.
Weeks until we do another WordPress show. So we're responsive design next week. So send us your questions, queries, tips, hints, and tricks to BritishTechNews@gmail.com. So if you've got any suggestions for responsive design, or you've got any questions around responsive design, or anything to do with web design entirely, if you've still got some questions about WordPress, there's no problem with that at all. Also, your ratings really matter on iTunes. So if you could jump on iTunes and give us some ratings, give us a review if you feel necessary. They really, really help our rankings, and we really appreciate that. So finally, Sarah, where can we get a hold of you?
You can get hold of me at Sarah Jane UK on the Twitters, and also on other shows on the network, including The Big Show and The F1 Show.
Ian, where can we get a hold of you, mate?
I'm also on the Twitters. I go by Maniac Yak. That's MANIACYAK. You can also hear me on the iOS show, which is we're going to be recorded tomorrow, but likewise every 2 weeks. And I suppose I should really say, look at my lovely WordPress-powered site, but I've been too busy with client work to update it recently, so I won't.
Isn't that always the way?
Yes.
Simon, where can we get hold of you?
You can find me on that Twitter, at Simon Wheatley. That's SimonWheatley. SimonWheatley.co.uk, same spelling. And my company Twitter is CFTP, which I run with that other Simon.
That's great. And I'm at Paul Wheatley on Twitter. That's Paul, WHEATLEY, same spelling. Or you can follow the network at British Tech News on Twitter. So thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Good night.
Thanks. Bye.